Good morning. Good morning, everybody. Once again, just before we get on to the full webinar itself, just a few pointers about finding your way through the webinar if you need some assistance with that. First of all, if you are needing to use keyboards or you'd like to use some of the keyboard shortcuts, there is a full list of the keyboard shortcuts on your help menu at the top of the screen towards the left under the help menu itself. You can raise or lower the volume of your speaker by using the control up and down arrows on Windows or the command option up and down arrows for a Mac machine. If you wish to chat, you can also move your cursor to the message text box by using either the control M on Windows or the command M on the Macintosh machines. Also, to open the closed captioning window on Windows machine, Control and F8 will open closed captioning. On the Mac, it is Command and F8. To close closed captioning, you can use the Alt F4 or Control W on Windows or Command W on the Mac machine. The audio for today's webinar is being broadcast through your computer, so once again, please make sure your speakers are turned on or your headphones are plugged in, and you can control the audio broadcast via the audio and video panel. You can adjust the sound by sliding the sound bar left or right. If you are having sound quality problems, please do check your audio controls. You can do that through the audio wizard, which is accessed by selecting the microphone icon on the audio and video panel to the top left of your screen. Also, if you do not have sound capabilities on your computer or prefer to listen by phone, please dial the number 1-712-432-3066. Once again, that number is 1-712-432-3066 and enter the passcode 148937. 148937. But please note that this is not a toll-free number. Once again, mobile devices do support the Blackboard Collaborate app, and you can listen to that on your iPhone, your iPad, various Android devices, and you can get the app directly from the Apple Store, Google Play, or from Amazon. We are captioning, as we've mentioned before, and the caption screen, in addition to the control and F8, can be accessed by choosing the icon, the little CC icon, which is in the audio and video panel up towards the top left of your screen. And once you have it selected, you do have the option to resize the captioning window, change the font size, and save the transcript. If you wish to submit questions, please go ahead and do so in the chat area text box, which is at the bottom right-hand side of your screen, and you can access that by pressing the Control M keys or Command M if you have a Mac, and that will take you into the chat area. If you are connected via a mobile device, you may submit questions in the chat area within that app too. If you're listening by phone and not logged into the webinar, please also feel free to send us questions. You can email those to webinars, that's webinars, at ada-audio.org. That's webinars with an S at the end, at ada-audio.org. And one important note, this webinar is being recorded and can be accessed at the website at the www.ada-audio.org within 24 hours after the conclusion of the session. You can also customize your view. You can resize the whiteboard where the presentation slides are shown, make it smaller or larger, by choosing the drop-down menu located above and to the left of the whiteboard. The default on this is Fit Page, but you can change the size of that as you need to. You can also resize and reposition the chat participant and the audio and video panels by detaching them and using your mouse to reposition or stretch or shrink any one of those little panels. And those panels may be detached by using the little, looks like a stack of pancakes icon in the upper right corner of each panel. It looks like a series of vertical lines with a little arrow next to it. Use that to detach the the panel. You can also set your preferences depending on your system settings for visual and audible notifications when people enter or leave the room if you need to do that. So turn off any of your notifications. You can select edit at the top of the screen at the toolbar. From the drop-down menu, select your preferences and then scroll down to general. And you can uncheck audible notifications or check audible notifications, and similarly with visual notifications, you can uncheck or check what you need. And for screen reader users, you can set your preferences through the setting options within the activity window, and control and slash opens the activity window. If you do experience any technical difficulties during the webinar, please do send us a message regarding your issue through the chat area, and the moderator will address your concern via private chat with you and see if we can get one of our IT staff members to help you with that offline. Or once again, send us an email at webinars@ada-audio.org, or you can also call us at 877-232-1990. That's 877-232-1990, and that is voice and TTY as well. All right, and that is taking care of the housekeeping events. Thank you for being patient with that. Please do remember to put any questions that you have through the session into the chat area as well. Welcome to the Accessible Technology webinar series. I am Judith Stark. I am the Accessible Technology Consultant for the Pacific ADA Center. And the Accessible Technology webinar series is sponsored by a correlation between the Great Lakes ADA Center, the Pacific ADA Center, and both of whom are members of the ADA National Network. A reminder that today's session is being recorded, and after the session, we will be sending out a handout to you along with an evaluation survey. So we'd be very pleased if you would take a couple of minutes to fill out the survey. That does help us in planning our sessions for not just for this year, but for next year and so on. Today's session, we are talking about speech recognition software, how it is used, and what you should know about when authoring web content. And I am delighted to welcome to the webinar Jonathan Avalar of the SSB BART group, who is going to demonstrate and talk us through this particular tool. It's a great assistive technology tool for us. Jonathan Avalar is the SSB's Chief Accessibility Officer and is involved in updating and maintaining SSB's unified audit methodology and best practice library relating to Section 508, WCAG, and other accessibility standards, and in fact has been very involved in this latest release of the update of the Section 508 standards too. So great to have him with us, really just with that new legislation very much in the public eye at the moment. He has deep experience in the analysis, design, and repair of software, web pages, mobile apps, Flash documentation, and a lot of hardware for accessibility. So has been around and done quite a lot. He has an extensive technical and programming background, and his own personal experience as a person with a visual impairment allows him to bring a valuable and unique perspective to access solutions for new and current technologies. He's worked with corporate environments, federal and state governments, and done an awful lot besides that. So without further ado, welcome Jonathan, and I will hand over the microphone to you, and please go ahead.
Great. Thank you, Judith, and welcome everybody. As Judith mentioned, we'll be talking about speech recognition software today, and kind of like people who can benefit from speech recognition software, some of the features, where it's supported, desktop, mobile, Mac, Windows, etc. I'll cover kind of some sample commands, and then we'll kind of get into the practical implementation. So what are some of the things you need to think about when building a website or web app that would work for people who are using speech recognition? I think it's one of the groups that's sometimes overlooked when you think about website accessibility. And then we'll also talk about ARIA, and I'll explain what that is and how that relates to speech recognition working on websites. And then provide some additional resources at the end of the presentation. So real quick, kind of just what you should take away after today. As I said, the people who can benefit from speech recognition, some of the main features, basically, what does it do, what can you do with it, and then you should be able to explain some techniques for building websites that can work with speech recognition. So those are what you should think about throughout the presentation. And if there's any questions, I'll be happy to answer them throughout. If it's important to understanding that particular slide, if not, I'll answer questions at the end of the presentation. So, kind of at the basic form, what is speech recognition? Well, it converts spoken words to text. So, there's really two different categories that can fall into dictation, where you're essentially dictating text. So you're typing emails, you're writing documents in the programs like Microsoft Word, or filling out forms on the web. The other context is that you can control your computer. So you can browse the web, meaning that you can navigate forward and backwards. You can scroll the screen up and down. You can select controls on a web page, or controls perhaps on your computer. You can open the start menu by using your voice, etc. So it's basically dictation and command and control. There's a variety of speech recognition software out there. Some of you are probably most familiar with Siri on the iPhone, or Dragon, actually speaking, on the computer. But the various different programs require different degrees of training to learn the speaker's voice and the commonly used words that the speaker may use. It does certainly improve accuracy if you can feed to the speech recognition software the words that you use most, so it can predict what those might be. And so Dragon, as an example, has a way to do that. Speech recognition also may be speaker independent or dependent. So, for example, the Dragon's often tailored to your particular person, a particular voice profile in that sense. But there are other speech recognition software out there that it will attempt to pick up anybody. It doesn't have the ability to customize it for your voice. So it may be less accurate in that sense. Some of the software that's out there is very aimed at a very specific set of commands, so maybe very limited. And also maybe cloud-based. So you may have speech recognition software like Siri on your mobile device, but you can only use it when you're connected to the internet, as opposed to other software, such as the Dragon, actually speaking, which you can install on your PC. So I'll cover all the different platforms and more about Dragon later on. I just want to use kind of some examples that you may be familiar with. Okay, so moving on. So the people who benefit from using speech software, well, basically anybody who has trouble using a mouse or a keyboard, repetitive strain injuries, dexterity challenges, other disabilities, MS, for example, or other aging factors, people may benefit from that. Keyboards sometimes can be beneficial to some people if they can't use a mouse. Other people, a trackball or other type of touchpad can be more accessible. So there's lots of different solutions. Some people may switch between using the keyboard or mouse at first, and then when they get tired, they switch to voice speech recognition. It just depends on the person. Kind of one challenge right now, and I think there's some work to solve this, is if you have a speech impairment in addition to a motor or dexterity challenge, speech recognition software does require some clarity of the voice, and it is a challenge for some users with speech impairments, so that may not always be an option. Kind of thinking beyond what we normally think about speech recognition, there are some other groups that it can be beneficial to. Some users who are blind or visually impaired use use speech recognition, such as Dragon, alongside their other assistive technologies, such as a screen reader. With the product, one product is called JSay, for example. And you may ask, well, you know, if you're speaking, why does it have to, you know, why do you need special software for it to work with a screen reader? One of the aspects of speech recognition software is it may pop up a tooltip on the screen to kind of show you what it thought you said. That information, of course, would need to be announced by the screen reader. So there are some aspects, and some of the training screens, for example, may need to be compatible with a screen reader. So there is some intermediate software that may be needed to make assistive technologies such as screen readers work correctly with speech recognition software. In addition, people that have learning disabilities, particularly people who have trouble taking their thoughts and putting them down on paper, could use speech recognition to speak their thoughts. And that would place the text on the screen, and then they could go back and arrange that text to help them write. So there's certainly some applicability there. There's also been lately use of automatic speech recognition, ASR, to create captions, to create real-time text from conversations to benefit people who are deaf or hard of hearing. So it's certainly a possibility. There are a lot of challenges in that, the limitations of accuracy, especially when you have a number of diverse speakers in the room, in their location. Those are challenges, but that's an area that we have seen progress. The software is also often used by other fields like legal and medical fields to assist in transcription of documents. So it's very common for them to use speech recognition software to give the transcriptionist a head start in the transcriptionist at that point would just correct the mistakes in the text that was automatically generated by the speech recognition software. Kind of one of the interesting points about this is that Dragon, which is currently made by a company called Nuance, it really has been marketed as consumer software, as productivity software to increase your productivity. It really hasn't been marketed as software that is assistive technology. It hasn't really been marketed specifically to people with disabilities, but it has a huge benefit for people with disabilities. It certainly has other applicability in our environment, for example, hands-free things such as when people are driving. So it certainly has a number of other consumer benefits. So what some of the features, let's go into a little bit more detail about that command and control and dictation. So with command and control, you can open applications. For example, I could say start Microsoft Word or start Internet Explorer. I can perform commands like copy and paste or bolding text in Microsoft Word. I can check checkboxes or radio buttons, scroll up and down, even move the mouse pointer around by using speech. As far as dictation go, a little bit more in detail, beyond just text, you are able to speak different types of text and numbers and spell out words, format the text, copy the text, and select different parts of the text and delete the text with your voice. So all those things that are kind of required for dictation, you can do specifically with tools like Dragon on the PC and the Microsoft Text, the speech recognition. A lot of the mobile solutions at this point are limited, so some of those options are just not available in the mobile environment at this time. Also, as I mentioned, you can move the mouse around with your voice. Okay, so what are some of the examples of supported apps? So let's first look at Dragon. Dragon Naturally Speaking, it's made by a company called Nuance. Before that, it was owned by several other companies, so the owner has changed over time. It works great with the desktop and Windows, email, different Office applications and different browsers. In fact, there's support for IE, Internet Explorer, Firefox, and Chrome. And the way it works is when you install Dragon, it installs an extension or an add-on for these particular browsers that allows it to work with those browsers properly. And Dragon 13, which is the most recent version, it supports the ARIA. ARIA is the Accessible Rich Internet Application Specification. And what that is, I'll go into more detail, but it basically allows you to add information to web pages to make the web page work better with assistive technology. And I'll explain more about that later. Dragon is certainly pretty, on the Windows environment, is one of the most popular speech recognition software out there. Now with mobile devices, Siri is probably more commonly known. In addition, Dragon has some other supporting features such as text-to-speech, so you can have it read information to you. So it does have some additional features that can also assist people with disabilities in hearing back the information that they dictated. It also has multiple versions, so there's the professional version, which allows you to customize and script it for places where it doesn't work. You have the premium version, where you can create some new commands, some macros, so to speak. That is, you, for example, if you want to give it a command that will type in some text for you automatically, like a salutation in a letter or a particular boilerplate text, you can just speak a keyword and it will insert that boiler text or graphic into, for example, your Word document. And then there's other home versions of naturally speak of Dragon. So there's lots of different versions out there. There's also legal and financial versions that are geared specifically to people in those fields. Supports a lot of different languages: English, French, German, Italian, etc. I talked a little bit also about the customization, and in particular, the professional version actually has a Visual Basic scripting language that's part of it, and it does allow you to do things like, for example, say you wanted to activate a button by voice, and that button was not designed to be accessible, and out of the box, Dragon did not allow you to click that button by using your voice, and perhaps say it also was not keyboard accessible. So you couldn't voice tab, press tab to get to that button. There are ways that you could script or customize Dragon, naturally speaking professional, to click that button. So I've done that in some cases. Previously, I did a lot of scripting customization for assistive technology, in particular JAWS, but also some for Dragon and some for screen magnification software. And the goal is with these scripts, you can make it more efficient for the user of assistive technology in performing actions, in particular repetitive actions. And sometimes you can make things accessible where they wouldn't have been accessible otherwise, by doing these custom scripting. And scripting is just, it's code, computer code that's associated when Dragon or when JAWS is running. And it's generally based on a specific application. So if we're in a specific context like Microsoft Word, I might have a specific script that would run when I say a particular keyword or phrase. Dragon is also best used on computers that are pretty powerful because it does use a lot of resources of memory to work. It's more effective there. Also, you want to have a good headset or microphone to use with it. That is very, very important. And also, you might want to consider that not everybody has the latest version of assistive technology. Some people, because of the cost or particular maybe the IT environment in which they're working, their job site, they may be limited to older versions of assistive technology. So you have to be mindful that when you're thinking, well, I can use ARIA because it now works with Dragon 13, you have to consider that some people may be still using Dragon 12, and that you want to make sure that your site is still accessible to them. Okay, let's move on. Past Dragon, Windows also has a speech recognition feature that's built into Windows. I have an example here from Windows 7. It has some of the same features, but it's not quite as powerful. It has voice profiles like Dragon that represent the voice characteristics of the current user and their particular machine and audio hardware, such as their sound card and their microphone. It also has a feature where it can look at your documents, look at your email, and see the words that you use most often and be prepared for you to speak those words so it can understand you when you speak those words. Some examples might be people's names or places or certain other medicines if you're in the medical field. Having those ahead of time can help the speech recognition software translate that properly. It also has the ability to turn on and off by voice. So for example, with Dragon, Windows speech recognition, you can say, wake up, start listening to me, and it will it'll start listening, and you can say, go to sleep, and it will stop listening to you, but it's still running in the background. It's still monitoring you. And Siri kind of has that same feature. If you're using Siri on the iOS device and it's plugged in and you have the latest updated operating system, you can say, hello Siri, and she'll start listening to you without you having to press the button. And this is really good for people who have trouble pressing the buttons on the keyboard to turn it on or off, or the home button on the iOS on the iPhone or iPad, for example. You don't have to click anything. The speech recognition software is always there in the background waiting for you to wake it up. The Microsoft version also has support for different browsers. The support, of course, is not as good as Dragon. It's a little bit more limited. You can use direct voice commands. A direct voice command, I'm going to use that term a lot throughout the presentation. A direct voice command is where you say something like, you have a button that's search. You say search, or you would say click search. That's a direct voice command. That's as opposed to giving a command such as press tab or click button or something like that. A direct voice command is where you're actually speaking the on-screen label of that control to activate it by your voice. As far as word processing goes and dictation, the Microsoft text-to-speech also supports some text selection, some formatting of text based on the toolbars that are displayed. And it also has a mouse grid feature, and I'll show you what that is later. But it allows you to use voice commands to winnow down a location on the screen where you want to click with the mouse, but I have an example of that later. Okay, it looks like we're trying to reconnect to the teleconference real quick, so just be a moment. Okay, so moving along to the Mac operating system. So in the latest version of Mac OS X, Yosemite, and in prior versions of OS X, there is also speech recognition built into the Mac. So by default, this speech recognition is limited to dictation. That means you can only dictate text to certain fields. Input fields, and you also have to be connected to the internet. But there's an additional option for you to be able to download the speech recognition files onto your Mac, and at that point, once you've done that, you can not only dictate without the internet, but you can also perform speech commands to control your computer. So it is decent speech recognition. It's similar to Windows text speech recognition. There's also Dragon Dictate available for the Mac, and I believe it's Dictate only. It doesn't allow command control of the Mac. So Dragon it also has available on the Mac. It's also available on some other environments. I'll be talking a little bit about mobile in a minute, and Dragon is also available there to a limited extent. So let me first talk about some of the other key players in voice recognition on the mobile environment. The first one is Siri. Siri is on the iOS platform. Siri is on the iOS platform. So that means iPhones, iPads, things like that. Cortana is the equivalent. It's on the Windows Phone 8 environment, such as Windows Phone 8.1. There's also Google Now, which is kind of the Android equivalent to Siri. And Siri and these systems, they have limited controls. And so you can dictate into input fields. Generally, it's cloud-based, which means you have to be connected to the internet in order to dictate. The control is limited to system commands. So you may be able to start some apps by your voice, say open iBooks as an example, or with Siri, you can say turn on VoiceOver, and that's the screen reader on iOS. You can say turn off VoiceOver. So it has some commands, but within applications, you can't use your voice to move from control to control or use your voice to tap a particular control. That doesn't exist from a system standpoint. There may be certain apps on iOS and Android that are designed to be used by a person that has a disability, and those apps may have built-in command and control specifically within that app, but it's not system-wide. One of the big shortcomings of even dictation on iOS, this is no command to be able to delete text. So say you've spoken something into an edit field or an input field, and Siri misheard you. There's real no easy way to delete that text that was incorrect by using your voice. And so for a person who can't easily touch that clear button on the input field on their phone, it's a big challenge. So one of the simplest things that manufacturers could do, such as Apple, would be to simply allow the user to delete or repeat the text that was incorrectly recognized. So that would be something very important. So really, the speech recognition on mobile devices is really not at the point where a person can use it to control their phone for everything they need to do. You can make phone calls, you can do certain things, but it's not at the point where you can use it within apps across your phone. So that's unfortunate. There are some other assistive technologies. For example, people have a motor or impairments. For example, there's switch control on an iOS, which allows a person to move their hand across the camera or move their head or touch a switch to control and use apps. And that is a great feature and does work very well. I think up to this point, some of the challenges have been on mobile devices is the power, the amount of memory and the processor speed of the mobile devices has been one of the limiting factors in the success of it. So as devices get more powerful, I think we'll see improvements to speech recognition on mobile devices. As I said, it may require an internet connection. There is some browsers that do support speech commands that are part of the browser. And one example is Dolphin's Sonar mobile browser. So Dolphin, the mobile browser is available free, and for 99 cents more, you can add speech recognition capability. So you can navigate and search by your voice in iOS and Android. So you can basically issue voice commands to move up and down the screen if it's a screen that has needs to be scrolled. You can use voice commands to go back or forward a page, to enter an address or perform a search. So that's called Dolphin Sonar. As I mentioned also, Dragon does have a dictation app for the different mobile platforms, and it's great for dictating text, and then you can copy that text out from the Dragon app, and then you can paste it into other apps on your mobile device. So if for some reason you find Dragon works better for you than Siri to dictate text and emails and things like that, that's another option for you. In addition to mobile devices, speech recognition is available on other platforms. In particular, YouTube uses it for automatic speech recognition. And the results sometimes are very poor or sometimes very funny what it comes up with. But in the end, it is actually helpful because it helps you in getting started with your captions. So by using the automatic speech recognition feature in YouTube, it will auto-caption a lot of text, and it will also put in the proper timestamps for you where the text is spoken. So even if you have to go back and change some words that were incorrectly recognized by the speech recognition program, the timestamps are already there for you, and that's kind of one of the big challenges in creating captions. So while the automatic speech recognition captions are not really an acceptable solution, they are a good start to help people in creating captions. Also, another Google product is Google Voice, and it has a handy feature that will convert voicemails to text. A number of voicemail systems have this. Ours does too at my company. It's not Google-based, but it will convert your voicemail to text, and it can email you the text of the voicemail along with a file that you can listen to. So this can actually be helpful to people who are deaf or hard of hearing. Also, other devices such as smart TVs are adding in speech recognition functionality. This is just another way that that vendors can, one, provide things to consumers so they don't have to use a remote. It also may help them benefit in the benefit of meeting some other legal requirements. For example, there's something called the CVAA, that's the 21st Century Communications and Video Accessibility Act of 2010. It has a requirement for set-top boxes and other types of television tuner equipment to be accessible to people with disabilities. So there's lots of different ways of making things accessible, and voice is one way that I think people will be adding in addition to speech output and things like that. Speech may also be built into some browsers and may also be available through something called an API, which is an applications programming interface. Basically, an API is a set of, it's like a contract that a developer can use to communicate with the browser. So for example, in Chrome, which is a very popular browser, there is the speech API. So you can have an edit field, and you could drop in a microphone button to allow anybody to dictate into that field. So one example on screen here, I have a picture of the search field in Chrome where you can search with Google by voice on your desktop. And that's without using Dragon or without using any additional assistive technology. There's also some other browsers such as Voice Opera that support voice control. Okay, so let's move on to actually using speech recognition software. It's important to speak naturally and speak clearly, use the same tone and speed and inflection that you normally would. Don't try to put a lot of pauses between words. You don't need to speak louder. anything like that. Speaking in phrases is actually better for modern speech recognition. It's actually much more accurate when you speak in phrases rather than speaking one word at a time. That was not the case originally when speech recognition software first came out. Back when it first came out in the days of DOS, the computers just weren't powerful enough to handle processing a whole phrase or a whole sentence. But now the models they use are very different than that, and they actually work better when you speak a complete phrase or sentence. It's also important configuring your audio environment properly whenever you're using speech recognition. So just like our Collaborate environment we're using today for the webinar, there's an audio setup wizard. There's some level of training that you can do, but that's actually been reduced. Every version, it seems like the Dragon comes out, the amount of training is less and less that you actually need to do as a user. So that's great. As I said, you should add vocabulary to it if you can, such as words that you commonly use. It will automatically scan your emails and your Word documents if you let it do that. Sometimes you may find that you want to dictate or you want to give it a command or spell something, but it's just not working. So one of the other cool features is it actually allows you to put it in a command mode and say, I'm just going to give commands. I'm not dictating text. Or I'm just going to be dictating text or just spelling. And these modes are helpful when it has trouble or if you only need it for commands, for example, and you don't want to dictate. There's lots of ways to do these. And in the Dragon application, the Dragon bar sits at the top of your window when you're using it. And there's an option there to select which mode you want to be in. The default mode allows you to use commands or dictation. You can also press a key on the keyboard as you're speaking, like the control key or the shift key, and it will force the command mode or the dictation mode. So there's lots of ways to do that. I talked a little bit about direct voice commands where you can just say the name of the control like save or bold and it will perform that action. Sometimes the speech recognition gets confused because it's not sure if you're talking about a command or if you're in an input field, maybe it thinks you want to enter that text. So sometimes it's helpful to append the word click, like click save. And sometimes that just works a little bit better. So it's certainly something you have to play around with to find out what works in which situation. So to give you a brief demo, I didn't actually want to bring up Dragon during today's call because, I'm sure Murphy is out there and something would go wrong. What I did is I put together a little sample script here of using Dragon on a web page and what you would say, and I have screenshots and I'll describe those of what happens. So I have my Dragon bar up in the screenshot and it's green letting me know that it's listening to me and it also has a different symbol that I can tell if I'm colorblind, I can tell it has a different symbol. It tells me it's ready to accept commands. So I say, wake up, and what happens is it wakes up. And then I say, start Internet Explorer, and it pops up Internet Explorer for me. And then I can say, open top site for Amazon. And basically what that does is this is a specific Dragon command. It pops up a box and it puts in the text Amazon. Say I want to go to Amazon. And what it does, top site, I believe it just like does a Google search and it just picks the first non-advertisement result for Amazon. And that's what it will take you to. So on this open top site box, there's a search button. And so when I say click search with my voice, it then brings up Amazon in Internet Explorer. You'll notice that there's no input focus in the search edit field. I'm just on the main screen. And so the next step is for me to say click edit box. And when I say click edit box, it places the caret, the little blinking vertical line, it places that in the search input field. And the reason why it works in this case, I may have also been able to say click search or click search, you know, edit box. In this case, there was only one edit box on screen. And so Dragon is smart enough to say, okay, if you say click edit box or click button, and there's only one of it, I'm just going ahead and click that. In this case, by clicking it, it's actually putting the caret into the edit box. And so I can start typing, or I can start dictating using my voice. So I can say magic bullet, and so it's going to dictate that text. It's going to put that in the edit field where I was. Then I can say click button, and in this case, once again, the go button is the only button on the screen. So it automatically clicks the go button for me without requiring me to say click go. And why I chose this is because I think there is might be another go button on part of Internet Explorer. And so sometimes you'll run into situations where you'll have a button on the web page that might have the same name as a control in the browser. And Dragon sometimes may be unclear which one you want to access. So it may click the wrong thing. Now, if we're within a web page and you have multiple things with the same name, Dragon is great about giving you options, and I'll show you that in just a minute, how that works. Okay, so now I say start scrolling down, and Dragon will automatically start scrolling the browser window down. So I can look at all the options, and then I can say scroll faster, and it will start speeding up how fast it's scrolling down the screen. And then when I want it to stop, I can say stop scrolling, and Dragon will stop scrolling. So now I can give a command such as click magic bullet. And so it will look for anything that's a link or button or anything that pretends to be a link or button. And if it has the word magic bullet in it, it will click it. If there's more than one item on the screen that's a link or button that has magic bullet, it will put numbers by those. And this only works within the web page in this case. It doesn't seem to work well between the web page and the toolbar item. So, for example, if I had a button called Go or Home, that might be a problem. But here on the web page, it works really well. So anything that's on screen that has the word magic bullet that I've spoken, it'll put a number by, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, etc. And then from here, if I want to choose one, I have to find the one I want, 1 or 2, and speak that. And so here I'm going to say choose 2. And as soon as I say choose 2, it clicks the element that had the number 2 by it, and it takes me to that product page. Now this is another case where I mentioned why you have to have specialized software when combining this with assistive technology. So for example, if you were using a screen reader, you wouldn't know if to click 1 or 2 or 3 because you wouldn't know what element that number is associated with on screen. That requires having vision. So that's where some of these products like JSAY can come in and be helpful. Okay, so that's kind of the end of the brief demo. Let's now talk a little bit about using Dragon on the web. We talked a little bit about direct voice commands, for example, click first name or first name without the click. Either one of those should work. You can say for a checkbox, you can say the same thing. In this case, I have a checkbox that has the label Remember Me, so I can say click Remember Me. I have a button that says Proceed, so I can say click Proceed, or I could just say Proceed. That's one way of using Dragon, these direct voice commands. Another way is to speak the item on the screen as a role. So say I can't see all the text of a link, or the link text is really long, or the checkbox text is long, I may be able to say the first word, you know, like say if we had a checkbox that started with the word do not, I could say click do not, and Dragon is probably smart enough to figure that out, but I could also just say click checkbox, or click radio button, or whatever it is I wanted to click, and Dragon will put up numbers by each one of those items. So I have an example here where I say, in the screenshot, I say click checkbox, and Dragon puts up a number by the three different checkboxes here, and this is an example from Twitter in the settings area. And I can then say choose one, or choose two, or choose three, and it will then check that particular checkbox. So the commands are available for links, for text fields, or edit box. It's the same thing. You can either say text field or edit box. They're available for button and radio button, available for checkbox, images, and this, and why images? You may say, well, image isn't interactive. You need to use the click image command if you want to click links that have images in them. So this will work for image links, and that's why it's available. And there's also click list box. And then for the list box, there's a show choices command. So that's basically how you can access interactive controls by voice in a browser. In addition, there's some other navigation type commands that you can use with voice. So you can always use keyboard commands. So when it comes down to accessible support, for a lot of users with disabilities, having proper keyboard access is critical, because if something is not working with a direct voice command or one of the other commands, you can voice keyboard commands. You could say press tab, press space bar, or press enter. Or if there's a hotkey, for example, for the next button, there might be an access key, Alt-N, for example, in Internet Explorer, if someone's assigned the N access key. That would work to click, it would move focus to the next button. If you said press Alt-N, it would move focus there, and then you could say press Enter, and that would cause the button to activate. Or some multimedia players, they work with single commands like the letter P. So you could say press P, and it starts playing the multimedia. So if there's shortcut commands, if there's keyboard commands, you can always voice those. So that's what we really fall back to. And I guess I think someone, Gary, had asked a question about using the Collaborate environment, which we're in right now. It's Java-based. So I don't believe Dragon supports Dragon to the extent needed. So if you're in an environment like this, a speech recognition user could voice the keyboard commands to move around. Like control F8 and control slash, or all those different commands would be available by voice. So of course, one of the things that's really important when you're using the keyboard is that you've got to know where the keyboard is. So that's another topic I'll talk about a little bit later. So in addition to voicing keyboard commands, if you want to scroll up or down, you can say, start scrolling, stop scrolling, scroll faster. You can say move up, move down by one, two, three, et cetera. So basically that just sends the up or down arrow key that many times. So you can say move down three, it's like pressing the down arrow key three times. Let's see. Sometimes you have an input field where Dragon just doesn't recognize your dictation. So there's a Dragon command to say show dictation box, and it pops up this dialog that has an edit field in it, and in that edit field you can then dictate into that edit field, and you know it's going to work because it's a standard edit field and it's provided by Dragon. So once you dictate into that box, you can say click transfer, and it will then basically copy out your text from this dictation box and paste it into the input field on the browser where you were. And so that's very helpful when you run into an input field where it just won't accept dictation. Okay, so let's talk about, now that we've, you know, have a good idea about how users would use speech recognition on the web, let's design websites that are accessible to speech recognition users. So what that means is providing on-screen labels. So it is a requirement, a part of WCAG, that's the Web Content Accessibility Guidelines 2.0. Level A and AA are the two levels of accessibility that most organizations choose to follow from WCAG. One of the success criteria for the WCAG guidelines is providing visual labels. And this is really important because if there's no visual label, then you can't voice that label to access the field. So making this work requires kind of two parts. One, make sure you have a visual label. That not only helps, you know, speech recognition users, it also helps users with cognitive disabilities and different types of disabilities that rely on visual labels. But the label also has to be associated with that form field. And so the term that I use in this presentation is the accessible name of the control. So we're not talking about the visual label, but we're talking about an accessible name that represents that control programmatically. And this is what assistive technology like a screen reader would voice. This is the particular label that you could then voice with Dragon for the control. So some examples of accessible names are ARIA labeled by, and we'll talk a little bit about ARIA a little bit later, but ARIA labeled by and ARIA label, those are two ways to set an accessible name for the control. There's also the label element in HTML. There's a title attribute. If you have a button, you might have a value attribute. And then you also may have alt text for an image, for example. So there's lots of these different, there's lots of different ways of setting the accessible name for a control. And in this particular case, if it's set up correctly and the label matches the accessible name, the speech recognition user can just voice that label and it will set focus to that control. So it's very important that this accessible name, depending on how you set it, matches that on-screen visual label. So I know I'm getting a little bit technical in some in ARIA here, and if you're not comfortable with that, that's perfectly fine. I think what the takeaway here is understanding that the visual label needs to match the accessible name. And if you then can pass that information on to someone else, like a developer, that will help them in setting this up, you know, correctly. So what I've kind of put all these details into a table here so you can understand which developers can understand which of these particular techniques can be used to provide an accessible name for a particular control. It's been my experience that the big one that doesn't work is the ARIA label attribute. It's not supported by Dragon. So that's kind of the big takeaway here. Certain attributes are supported in certain places. For example, the title attribute can be used to provide an accessible name for a form field, like first name or last name. And so the user can voice that text and Dragon will pick up on it. But if you assign that same title to, say, an image link, Dragon will not look for that title attribute in the image link. It is going to be looking for probably the alt text in the image. So you need to be careful about which techniques you apply to which controls. And I think this table will be very helpful. I also recommend for anybody who's designing websites to be testing with assistive technology, testing with users that have disabilities so you can understand where this works. And I have a little bit more detail about this. I'll go into it in just a few minutes. But you know, the other thing I point out real quick about this particular item is that implicit labels are also not supported. And an implicit label for anybody who's a programmer for HTML is that it's where you have a label tag and it wraps around a control, such as an input control. That's an implicit label. that is also not supported by Dragon, and that's historically been a challenge. So also, it's very important to assign proper roles. So one of the things that we see very often confused on websites are links and buttons. So if a control looks like a button, it should be a button. If it looks like a link, it should be a link. To give you a kind of an explanation of what the difference is between a link and a button usually performs an action, whereas a link usually navigates to a different location. So a link would take you to a new web page, or a link would take you to a different place within the current web page. Whereas an action, a button performs an action such as searching or signing on, even though that takes you to a different page when you sign on, it may take you to a different page. It's a particular action. You're not just navigating, you're actually performing a task, such as signing on or uploading a file or saving a file. Those are things that are buttons. And so, you know, I have a screenshot up here of an upload button and a sign-in button, and I say, you know, these look like buttons, but are they really buttons? And so it's one of the things, like, you have to get in and look at the code, and you have to say, is this really a button? So with Dragon, you could also say, click button. And if these don't show up as buttons, then you could say, click link. And then if they show up with the click link command, then they're actually coded as links and not coded as buttons. And so, while yes, the user could probably muddle through and figure that out, it's best to use the appropriate type of element or role when you're creating links and buttons. It's also helpful, just in particular, to make sure that your control looks actionable. A lot of times we see people creating these controls, and if you're using a mouse, you hover your mouse over it, and maybe a hand pops up, right, or something happens. You go, oh, okay, I can click on that because I saw that hand. If you're not using your mouse, if you're just using your voice, you may not know that that control is clickable or actionable or interactive. And so it's helpful to visually communicate to the user that, hey, this control is interactive. You can interact with it by voice or the mouse or whatever by its visual appearance. As I talked about before, keyboard access is very, very important. It benefits all users. It's required for keyboard-only users, and it's also a fallback for speech recognition users. One of the things that's really important about keyboard access, though, is you have to be able to discover or find out what the commands are. So I've seen a lot of applications that say, yeah, we're accessible, you know, we have these keyboard commands, but the user has no idea what the keyboard commands are, so they're not able to benefit from that because they're not documented, or they're documented in such a way that they're very hard to locate. Another particular item that's difficult is scrolling within a web page. So normally, most web pages can be scrolled vertically, but sometimes they'll have an additional area within the page that also can be scrolled with the mouse, and they have a second scroll bar. These areas are particularly difficult for users of speech recognition to scroll and read the content that's off screen. They can scroll the main page easily with the commands in Dragon, but scrolling that inner scrolling area is very difficult. So if you have to use those, you'd have to make those keyboard accessible so where the user could tab to that scrolling area and then be able to use commands to move up and down it, such as, you know, using a press page up and down, or speaking a press move down, or move down or press down arrow, things like that to be able to scroll that area. Also, drag and drop, rollovers, those types of things really need to be keyboard accessible also, because those are probably going to be a challenge to activate by voice. In particular, the things where you just hover your mouse over something and something pops up. Dragon users can use the mouse to move around, but it's not optimal. It's not something we would want to rely on. Having keyboard access to those things is necessary for other users with disabilities, so it's just best to build in keyboard support. Kind of just a couple interesting things that we've noticed with Dragon in particular in Internet Explorer, when you're in an input field, if you speak text into that input field, Dragon actually is programmatically working with that input field. So it's not actually, say I said the word Smith. Dragon is not actually entering, pressing the key S-M-I-T-H. It's not pressing those individual keys into that input field. When I dictate the word Smith, Dragon is actually programmatically setting the value property of that input field to Smith. And so generally that's going to be okay, right? Where that's a problem is if you have form field validation. So say you have a validation code that looks to see if there's been proper certain number of characters were entered into an input field. And so in that particular case, it may be looking for a key press. And we ran into a situation recently where this was the case, where the form was saying, you didn't enter any text into the field. We spoke the word Smith was on screen in the field, but the validation code that was looking for key presses, and it, no key presses had been made. So just be aware that when you're working with assistive technology, and one example is Dragon, it may programmatically click things, it may programmatically set the value of things by voice, so you need to be aware of that. So it may not actually be clicking with the mouse, it may not be actually sending a keystroke to the application. Okay, so real quick, the last thing is this mouse grid. I alluded to this earlier. And the mouse grid basically, and this is available in Dragon, it's also available in the Windows speech recognition software. When you say mouse grid, it brings up this grid of 9 different squares on the screen. And then it allows you to basically winnow down the area. So, for example, if I had a task where I need to drag a document from the left-hand side to a trash can, there are some mark and drag commands in Dragon, but I could also, in order to use those, I would have to use the mouse grid first. So, for example, I have the number 5 appears in the mouse grid above one of the documents I want to work with. So when I say choose 5, it's going to put another mouse grid within that cell that has the number 5 right now. And so I go from a large area of the screen to smaller areas of the screen. Each time I say choose 5 or choose that number, it's going to get, the grid is going to appear in a smaller and smaller area until I can say, mouse click or mark, and then I can drag, and then I can use the mouse grid again to define the area where I want to drop the item. So this can be very tedious. So normally I wouldn't consider this accessible, right? Yes, you could use it using the mouse grid. Yes, you could do things with the mouse grid, in particular if you can see it well enough. But we would require keyboard access or alternative ways instead of dragging and dropping because these operations are just going to be very difficult for the user. Okay, so a couple more details. I have another particular issue is with input fields. So you all familiar probably with Google Docs. It uses kind of a custom, what I would call rich text editor. So it means that it's like a word processor in a browser where you can bold text and select text and do all these things. There's no real common way to have these controls across browsers like IE and Chrome and Firefox. So what companies do, like Google and even Microsoft, they create their own editor, their own rich text editor, their own word processor control. And these controls sometimes don't work as expected with speech recognition. So you may be able to perform some commands. You may be able to enter text or select some text or speak keyboard commands, but certain things aren't going to work properly. So it's it's really important that anytime you have these types of controls, that you do testing, and that you make sure that all the commands that the user would need can be accessed either directly by voice commands or through by voice and keyboard commands. You want to make sure that these custom input areas are accessible. The other kind of last thing I had for this was fixed position content. So I have an example here of the new CNN site. And the CNN site has this positioned navigation bar that's always at the top of the screen. And no matter if you scroll to the bottom of the site or where you are, this bar always sits at the top of the screen. And previously in Dragon, if you wanted to click a link in these bars that are fixed on the screen, Dragon wouldn't work properly with them. That's now fixed in Dragon 13. I'm not exactly sure which version it was fixed in, but it was recent. So I have a screenshot up here of Dragon 13, and when I say click link, it's showing me numbers that I can choose by all the links on the page that are currently visible, including that fixed area. So it's working correctly in Dragon 13. But I also provided a screenshot from the Microsoft text-to-speech to show you kind of what it looked like with CNN. And I used the show numbers command. So with Microsoft's speech recognition, if you want to click something like a link or button, you basically say show numbers, and it puts these numbers in these blue boxes above all the things that can be clicked. And they come up and then they go away and they come up again. They kind of flash a little bit to help you see what's behind them. But I found in doing this that Microsoft's speech recognition that there's actually some content behind the page that is off screen, but it still sees. So it's still putting these numbers. So essentially, the way this page is designed, there's so much content, and even though it's not visually there, it's not hidden in a way that works with Microsoft's speech recognition. So I have all these numbers that I can choose that are layered on top of each other, and you can't really tell what to click because it's a mess. There's so many boxes, it's really not usable. So it's just something to keep in mind when testing about all these assistive technologies, and whether you consider this a bug in Microsoft's or not, it's something to be aware of. Okay, so moving on to ARIA is the Accessible Rich Internet Specification. It's a recommendation from the W3C, that's the World Wide Web Consortium. It's a set of attributes that you can add to HTML code and other markup languages. So for example, before HTML5, there was no progress bar, so I could add a progress bar role to a generic element like a div, and I could assign it properties like ARIA value, value text, etc., and an assistive technology like a screen reader, and to some extent, Dragon would see this control now as a slider. So similarly, to the progress bar role, there's also a button role. So by assigning the role of button to a generic element like a div, I'm now telling Dragon that, hey, this is a button. So if the user says click button, Dragon will now put a number above that button. So ARIA doesn't affect the visual appearance of things. It just affects how it works with assistive technology. ARIA is also, something that should be used carefully. If you can use native structures, like a native HTML button, do that whenever you can. Don't just say, oh, I can apply ARIA to something. I don't have to use the correct HTML control. Use correct HTML controls whenever you can. As I mentioned, Dragon 13 now works with ARIA. From what I can tell, the Microsoft and Mac speech recognition does not support ARIA. So the supported roles that I found with ARIA and Dragon are buttons. So you, like I said, you could apply a role of button to like a div. It also works with links, radio buttons, and checkboxes. List boxes are not supported. So these are really the roles that work with Dragon. There are other controls, other widgets, ARIA widgets such as combo boxes and menus and all those things. Dragon doesn't really pay attention to those roles, but you can voice the name of the control, and that does work. So that's really what's most important. So as I said before, the first rule of using ARIA is use standard HTML elements whenever you can. Implement the keyboard pattern associated with the ARIA control. So if you're going to implement ARIA page tabs or ARIA lists or menus, make sure you implement the proper tab order, the proper keyboard arrows up and down, left to right, spacebar and enter. Make sure you implement those. Also found during my testing that Dragon will treat any element with a tab index or an on-click event as a link. So if you do have a generic element, like a div, and you've assigned a tab index or an on-click to make it work with the mouse, Dragon will consider that a link. So if you say click links, it'll show up as one of the choices. That's not really the preferred way. You may have other issues for other assistive technologies. So once again, use an anchor when you can, use a button when you can. If you have to use a generic control or element like a div or a span, apply the role of button or link to it appropriately. I found also similarly though that Microsoft speech recognition does not work with generic elements for tab index or on click. So that's even more the reason to use proper HTML elements like button or anchor. ARIA labeled by support is pretty good. And so real quick, ARIA labeled by what that is. ARIA labeled by is an attribute you can add to like a link or a form field, and it will you put in the an ID, one or more IDs, and it points to another piece of text on the screen that acts as the label for that particular control. This works really well for inputs, checkboxes, radio buttons, divs, etc. It doesn't appear to work with buttons. ARIA label, which is not supported with Dragon, is where you can actually just put a string of text in. So if I had an input field, I could have ARIA-label equals quote first name or username. And so ARIA label is actually a string of text. It's not referencing another control on the page. But Dragon seems to ignore that ARIA label. As I said before, ARIA label by is supported well. So if you use it, or if you use standard links in things like menus or trees or sliders or page tabs or all these other types of controls that we're now seeing on web pages, it's going to work pretty well with those controls as long as it has an accessible name and it has a role of a link or button, or as long as it's clickable with Dragon, Dragon's going to provide direct voice access to it by speaking the accessible name, or it's going to provide access by the user saying click link. So how does ARIA fit into WCAG? ARIA is certainly not required for WCAG conformance. WCAG is the Web Content Accessibility Guidelines. But ARIA is can be used to meet the conformance requirements if the assistive technology that you're trying to conform with works with it. So for example, if you're using Dragon 13 and you're saying we support Dragon 13 in our environment, say at a university or within an organization, then you and your screen readers and other assistive technology support ARIA, then you can use ARIA as a way to meet WCAG conformance. If your assistive technology stack does not support ARIA, then you may not be able to rely on ARIA to meet WCAG conformance. I have a couple blogs here in the resource section that I put together on testing with speech recognition and some information about what's supported in ARIA. It's basically stuff I've already covered here, but you can certainly share this with other people. There's a lot of great shortcuts, speech shortcuts for Dragon. And I've also provided some information on ARIA and speech recognition on Windows and the Mac platform. So I think at this point I've covered everything in the presentation. I'd be happy to answer questions.
Great. Thanks so much, Jonathan. That was really very interesting. Certainly showed me a number of things that I didn't know about, and certainly the role of keyboard access in speech recognition software is really important. It's something that one thinks about simply for dexterity measures, but with speech recognition, it's great to know that the role is so important there too, and to be able to emphasize it in other groups as well. All right, a couple of questions that we have from earlier in the session. The first one is, ARIA support, is that so that you can move from landmark to landmark in a WAI ARIA web page? And does it work for visual users? I'm not entirely sure what the comment is about the visual users, but is that something you can answer there?
Sure. So ARIA landmarks are basically a way to tag certain areas of the page as representing different structures, such as one of the landmark roles is a navigation, another one is the main area of the page, another one is the footer area of the page. And so assistive technology users may jump to those pages, like a screen reader user may be able to jump to those sections of the page by using a keyboard command in their screen reader. Unfortunately, that has not really come across to other assistive technologies or to keyboard-only users. So at this point, not many browsers or support keyboard access to jump directly to those sections of the page. I don't believe that's supported by Dragon, no. Unfortunately not.
Great, thank you. Okay, second question is, how do you ensure closing a pop-up box with Dragon without closing all the tabs and, in fact, the whole browser? So I guess the question is, when you have nested or multiple boxes open, how do you make sure you're closing the correct one?
So that's a good question. So obviously there needs to be a mechanism to close it with the keyboard. And that's often like a close button. Some people may have the word close in there. So if you say click close, Dragon may click the wrong thing. And then you would close your browser window and lose your information. So yeah, I would suggest that you have a close button, but don't call it close. So all dialogues need to have a way to close them with the keyboard anyways for other users with disabilities. So perhaps having a dismiss button or a cancel button or some other button with a different term than the word close would probably be the safest way to accommodate that.
Great. Yeah, I guess that is a little bit like having links that just say click here. If you've got multiple click here links, it's the same thing as having multiple close buttons. So once again, the link between usability and accessibility, make sure that your labeling is clear. It certainly does help the person who is using your page. All right, the next question, how do you fix YouTube captioning that maybe was created using voice recognition but is incorrect? Or can you provide the person some information on where to find that information?
If you have access to the video, you can change that. So if you're the one who posted the video, it is very easy to go in there and change it. I don't have the information off the top of my head, but there's a lot of great YouTube videos and instructional materials on their site to update the captions. If you didn't create the video, I off the top of my head, I don't know what the options would be. I don't know, honestly.
Okay, I think that's fair enough. Okay, next question is, will Mac and Microsoft modify their speech recognition in the future to work with the ARIA tag? So is there some advocacy that is going on to work with them to bring them into the fold a little bit more?
So that's a good question. First, I think the first step is letting them know that there's a problem. Apple has an accessibility@apple.com email address. I'm always emailing them, letting them know about bugs. So I would say email them at that address and tell them that that's something I'd like to see. They're never committal about fixing things, but they sometimes will give you a number, like a bug number or a tracking number with that. As far as Microsoft goes, Microsoft has good accessibility help desk support, and I would contact their team. I don't have the information directly, but they have a very good initiative to work with users of assistive technology. So I would definitely just share that information with them, bring it to their attention.
Great. I think it's important, just being an ongoing advocate and to letting people know about something is always a help. People sometimes don't even know that there might be a problem with the website, and bringing it to their attention is helpful. Okay. In Dolphin browser for the iPad, do you have to set anything in order for it to work with voice?
On the iPad, you can dictate, for example, into Safari, into an edit field using Siri on the iPad. But for the Dolphin one, yes. So if you're using the Dolphin Sonar browser, there is there's a button that you have to tap. But I believe you can, there's an option to always have it listen, and you have to give it access to your microphone. So I believe that is an option, but you do have to set it up once initially. When the microphone is active on iOS, I believe it changes the color of the bar at the top of the screen, so you know it's listening to you.
Great. Okay. One last question that has come up is somebody is saying that she could not find the Sonar browser specifically, only the Dolphin mobile. Can you give some pointers on where to find that Sonar browser?
Yes. So I believe I just installed the Dolphin browser, and then there was an option within the browser to add Sonar to it. And I'm trying to think of where that was. But if you open the Dolphin browser, there should be a picture of a dolphin at the bottom. And then once you do that, there should be an option. And then you can purchase for 99 cents the ability to control it by voice.
Lovely. All right. Thank you very much. Well, at this stage, it looks like we have got through the questions that we have. I don't know if there's anything else that you would like to just add at this point, Jonathan. Certainly, the information that you've given us has been really, really helpful. And I think for me, as I said, the takeaway with this, in addition to the technical information, is once again that all of these things are so interlinked, the assistive technology, how we set things up in an accessible format, and how that there's a merge over one particular form of disability with another, and the requirements for one can very often be a requirement for another. So thank you so much for that, and hand it over to you for any last comments.
No, just thank you all for attending. Be happy to, if you want to contact me, I'm on Twitter, and I provided my contact information on my email. So definitely also second, what Judith was saying about, if there's issues with websites, just letting the people know that there's an accessibility issue, pointing them to resources to address those, letting companies know, like Nuance, that people are using their products as an assistive technology, and it's important that it, is accessible. It's not just, it's a great consumer product, and I really like the convergence of consumer products and assistive technologies, because I think that reduces the cost of assistive technology, it brings assistive technology into the mainstream. So that's a good thing, but at the same time, we need to keep people aware that we are using these, and sometimes when manufacturers make changes, they can break things and make them inaccessible.
Lovely. Thank you for that. All right. Well, I think we've just about come to the end of today's session. Once again, thank you all for participating. It's been a particularly enlightening session today, and thank you again, Jonathan, for that. Just a reminder for those of you who will be joining us for the next session, that will be on May 21st, and we will be having Lainey Feingold, who is one of our California legal beagles, to talk about digital and technology access, the role of law and the limits of law, and particularly relevant today because of the changes that we're seeing coming through, the long-awaited updates to the Section 508 requirements and so on. So please join us for that. It should be a very interesting talk and a discussion then. And I think that is it. So please, again, the evaluation link is on your screen. We would be very pleased if you could give us some feedback on the session for today, and also some suggestions for what you'd like to see us cover going forward. So thank you again, Jonathan, and goodbye to all of you, and we look forward to seeing you all on the 21st of May.